going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And so much more. And to talk all things Browns and the schedule and how it might impact your Cleveland Browns and the quarterback kerfuffle that we have going on, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know him as a NFL.com author, the great Eric Edholm joins us now. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on? How are you?
We're all right here. We're arguing over whether a six-win prediction can act as homerism here.
Yeah. It's nice, Eric, for the first time in 10 years here, I get to be a homer. So I'm kind of relishing in it, but I can't live in a world where six wins is being a homer.
Well, you look at that schedule, man. It's not easy. I know there's some spots where I think there's some winnable games, but we truly don't know how teams like the Bengals are going to be this year. You know, the Steelers obviously don't have a quarterback yet. The Dolphins, so there are a lot of Raiders are another team that could be, have a high range of variance there depending on a few things. But yeah, I mean, Titans are another one. You know, if Cam Ward plays well, how do you grade them right now? So it just feels like there's a lot of games on there. I mean, there's a lot of tough games, but also a lot of games that, it's hard to know exactly what they're facing right now, but they're going to have the work cut out for them, I think.
So with that third toughest schedule in your estimation, how does that factor into the four-headed quarterback race we have in our hands this summer?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, obviously, and I'll be fascinated. First of all, I'd love to be a fly on that wall in the quarterback room just to see how those personalities get along and everything. It's a motley crew for sure. I mean, I don't know how much Deshaun's going to be in the room, but the other four certainly are. You can make a case for every one of them. Obviously, Joe with his starting experience, a new opportunity for Kenny, probably more of a reserve, but you never know. Especially if the young guys aren't ready, but Gabriel or Sanders, you certainly could do the same for either of them. And I think you just kind of look for some signposts in the schedule. I would say if London's a disaster, even without the bye the following week, you come home and it wouldn't be shocking if there's a new starter. The bye week happens right around the midpoint of the season. That's an obvious place, an inflection point of the season, if you will. But maybe it happens sooner. Maybe there are multiple changes too. You never know how it's going to roll out. And I guess you have to look at the schedule and try to ask yourself, all right, if we go with Joe here, how long are we giving him? What's the leash like? And how ready are the kids to step in if need be?
Eric, with the schedule, though, it does feel like whoever gets that first little stretch is at a complete disadvantage. Bengals, Ravens, Packers, Lions into a London game against the Vikings. Like, there's 0-5 is staring you in the face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right. You could say 0-8, too. I mean, I'm not saying that the next three are world beaters, but, again, you could make a case for the Steelers, Dolphins, and Patriots. If not, I mean, the Steelers, it's, you know, dependent on Aaron Rodgers, obviously, and what the quarterback situation is. But, you know, I think the Patriots with Vrabel and all the moves they've made this offseason look like a better team to me. I mean, Dolphins are hard to figure out. They're in my kind of a grab bag or who knows what they're going to be list of teams. But, I mean, that's the daunting part is, I always look at the first handful of games of every team and say, you know, are we looking at 5-0 or 0-5 or somewhere in between, you know, and that's kind of the toughest part with Cleveland, I would say, is getting off to a good start is going to be very difficult.
Eric, in terms of big picture strength of schedule, do you think it matters to each team equally, or do you think it kind of waned, ebbs and flows from each team?
Yeah, I had somebody kind of point out on social media, hey, why are you putting like last place teams on this list? Shouldn't this be for contenders? Well, first of all, we don't really know who the contenders are going to be, right? We have an idea. Obviously, Vegas has its thoughts on the matter, and you know, you can use the analytic projections and all that and try to figure out who's going to be good and who isn't. But there's a luck factor involved. And so, you know, I don't know. It's really hard to say. Obviously, teams with a rookie quarterback or potentially a rookie quarterback, you say to yourself, yeah, the schedule does matter, right? You're going to try to figure out when the Giants are going to turn it over to Jackson Dart, right? Where's that spot in the schedule? Does Russell Wilson make it to the Denver game? That's a question a lot of Giants fans are having right now. You know, a first-year head coach, I think you always look at it and say, you know, how are they going to handle this? Do they have a lot of primetime games? Is there going to be a lot of extra planning there? Where does the bye week fall? You know, for a guy like Mike Tomlin has been the block, you know, around the block a million times, Andy Reid, they adjust. They've seen everything, right? But the younger coaches who maybe have less experience kind of organizing a full team plan, I think that stuff matters.
Where do you think this Browns team is better than they were last year? Because remember, Eric, we're coming off just a 3-win team last year, too.
Yeah. There's only one real way to go up, I would say. But, I mean, there's at least competition at the quarterback position. I mean, who knows? Maybe it ends up being better than we think. And obviously it would help a great deal if one of the young guys emerges at some point, whether it's training camp, first quarter of the season, first half, somewhere in the back half, whatever. You know, defensively, they were always going to be in the upper half, I would think, you know, with what they have. And, you know, adding a few other little pieces here and there, obviously Mason Graham's going to be a big part of what they do. And, you know, offensively, I don't know. I don't know what to think yet. The running back situation so much better. I mean, just with and this isn't a shot at Nick Chubb, who's one of my favorite running backs in the league, but obviously health considerations. And I just think they really did a good job of pairing the two backs together. You still have Jerome Ford, but I mean, to me, Judkins the hammer, Samson's the lightning guy. You know, he's the change of pace guy. So they could have a really good run game and be very efficient in that way. Help the quarterbacks out, help the offensive line out. You know, maybe that ends up being sort of their bread and butter offensively, along with the short passing game.
Eric Edholm of NFL.com and the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The Browns are one of three teams, Eric, to have zero primetime games. Is giving zero primetime games to a team, is that disrespectful?
I think if a coach is being honest, they would say, love it. Absolutely love all these. You know, I know they have an early game in London, but still, I mean, basically all 1 o'clock Eastern kickoffs. How great is that? If there's a rhythm, there's a flow, guys understand, okay, I got to get up at this time, be ready by this time, you know, just sort of mentally preparing for that. When you have a ton of night games and, you know, different kickoff times, Saturdays, Thursdays, whatever, you know, it throws off the rhythm a little bit. It feels like you're being put through the blender. So, I mean, you can look at it and say, clearly the expectations are not sky high for this team. And right now there isn't that, you know, that one sort of marketable star on the team. Again, I'm not saying Myles Garrett isn't a star, but again, TV ratings tend to be quarterbacks and playmakers. So, you know, you can look at it that way and take it as a slight. And I'm sure they'll use it as motivation on some level. But quietly, I don't think they're upset about it at all. And, you know, it's a good way to say, hey, if you do well, hey, I told you so, right? But we'll see.
Do you like the idea that the NFL is just veering heavily into the idea that, hey, Chiefs, you're not only on Christmas and we're giving you that primetime game, we're giving you as many primetime games as we possibly can. And they're almost doing kind of like what the NBA did with the Lakers and LeBron, where it's just, you know, Lakers every year, it's 75% of their games are nationally televised games. Like, we're getting to that spot with the NFL. Is that a good thing or a bad thing that it's so team dependent and just a few select teams?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Boston in the 80s, and I saw that happen with the Celtics and Lakers and, you know, a couple of the other primetime teams, obviously Jordan later with the Bulls and stuff. And, you know, you saw it in the 90s with the NFC teams and the NFL. And, you know, for an emerging league or a league that needs a little help, I think that's the obvious go-to move. Put star players on TV. You know, Caitlin Clark is on – every game is on TV for the WNBA because – she's the showcase star, right? But the NFL is king of the hill. I think they could put other games on there. And again, I'm not criticizing my employer. There are different ways to do it. Obviously, the Chiefs' record of success is almost impenetrable. I mean, they've been tremendous, you know. But, you know, you kind of ride that line of we want as many competitive games on prime time as possible. Let's go with as many sure things as we can. That makes sense. But on the other, you know, there are some teams like the Jaguars with Travis Hunter who are all of a sudden fascinating TV. And, you know, there's a reason why that, you know, people want to tune in. They want to see what this kid can do. And, you know, I'd like to see some of those other guys emerge and have those other teams emerge and get their shot on prime time as well. It's a gamble, but they're such a, you know, I mean, they have such a stranglehold on the sports market. I think football is so massive. I think it's okay to take those risks and put the good teams at 1 o'clock on a Sunday sometimes.
All right, Eric, we're going to put you on the hot seat before we let you go. How many wins do you see for the Browns based off this schedule?
5.5. No, I had to go below what you guys said. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I guess you have to think about the Bengals are probably going to be back, although, you know, that's two straight years where they've been around that 500 mark, and who knows if Joe stays healthy and who knows if they have a defense. Steelers have some questions too, so I'd say the door is slightly ajar for them to make a move, but then again, I go back to the schedule and say right now it looks really difficult, so it's hard for me to put a big number up there, but, you know, I would say somewhere in that 5-7 range feels reasonable. But there are so many variables, and especially a quarterback, that right now it just sort of feels like me throwing a number out there.
Eric, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the offseason.
All right, man. Thank you very much. See you guys.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Did Shador move up the depth chart to you, Tone?
No. Should he have?
Does it still matter that he's a fifth-round pick, or does that not matter anymore?
I'm just asking that question.
Okay. You want to bring it up with Mary Kay?
Yes.
Let's bring it up with Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com as we released the 2025 NFL schedule yesterday. Mary Kay Cabot and definitely some Canadian geese behind her. Hello, Mary Kay.
That actually was some Canadian geese or some kind of geese flying past me here. You're very right about that.
They are something.
Sorry about that.
You're fine.
It's a long, long story that I will tell you sometime. But you're asking if Shador moved up the depth chart. I'm going to say no on that. No, he did not. He had a nice rookie mini camp, but so did Dylan Gabriel. I thought they finished the rookie mini camp fairly even. Mm. I thought that Shador did some nice things. His footwork looked good. The ball came out well. For the most part, it went to the right place. Dylan, same thing. Good spin, good arm strength, good revolution on the ball. Operated well, made good decisions. He did have a pass picked off and another one that went off the hands of, I think it was Harold Fannin, that was later picked off on the day that might have even happened when we weren't there. But we did see Carson pick off the one in the red zone drill. But I don't think you can score one of these guys ahead of the other after that rookie mini camp. First of all, we don't know what they're being asked to do. We don't know what they're being told to do. And there are a lot of things that are going into these drills, including installation and trying to get people in the right spots and just the whole mechanics and the operation of everything. And I thought Dylan did a fabulous job with all of that. And then Shador, he made a few maybe more wow plays than Dylan did. But operationally speaking, I thought Dylan played a really nice, clean couple of days. And that's also vitally, vitally important in this competition. So I can't score one of them ahead.
Do you believe, as we get ready for OTAs and mixing in the veterans, that the labels of the fifth round and the third round still matter to the quarterbacks?
They don't matter to the quarterbacks. They don't matter to the
receivers. Or to the team. To the team, I should say. No. I apologize. I was trying to hold back a sneeze.
No, it doesn't matter where they were drafted. None of that stuff matters. But what that tells us is how they felt about Dylan Gabriel over how they felt about Shador Sanders. So it's not the fact that they picked them third round, fifth round. It's the fact that they went after Dylan hard and knew that they were going to get him in the third round. And that was their strategy heading into the draft, and that they passed on Shador six times, and that they would have been perfectly happy coming out of that weekend without him. They wouldn't have been perfectly happy coming out of that draft weekend without Dylan Gabriel. So I think that's how you have to look at it. Not where they were drafted, but why and how they were drafted.
Mary Kay, as usual, when it comes to rookies, draft picks, Browns training camps, even though we're not even at training camp, there tend to be these factions that develop and these battle royales that permeate not just on social media, but in my text messages. So Mary Kay, I would ask you, what is the responsibility of the media? Because I've seen the local media under attack already for either comments about height or comments about Shador Sanders and his camera crews and all of that. Like, how is it that the media should cover these two rookie quarterbacks? Because it's not often that you see quarterbacks drafted like this in the same draft that compete immediately.
No, it's not often that you see something like this, and you're exactly right about that. There is a lot of commentary, there's a lot of feedback, and a lot of input from the outside. The Shador Sanders world, you know, the Sanders squad is one of the things that we are thinking about calling it. It rivals Manziel Mania and the Baker Bros. I mean, it is, they're out in full force, and you know what? Good for them. It's great that you can support a player that you love like that, and you're going to follow him into the pros, and you're going to have his back at all times. So he's got that. Dylan doesn't really have that kind of an army following him around like that, at least not yet. So you've got some of that. And then the other thing to consider here is the fact that 10 years ago, 12 years ago, or maybe even when RG3 and Kirk Cousins were both drafted in the same season, there wasn't even this much social media as there is now. Now, there's not just Twitter, but it's, of course, Instagram and TikTok and everything else. And not only are we covering the football team with our own two eyes and being out there and watching and observing, but everybody else is covering rookie minicamp that doesn't even show up. You've got aggregations coming out of everywhere. And if one person says one thing about Shador, then people are just running with that and taking it as gospel. And I just kind of had to laugh after seeing all that, because even on the first day, oh, Shador won the day. And it was like, no, I was there. Shador didn't clearly win the day. I had people that very first day saying to me, oh, I thought Dylan won the day, and other people, Shador won the day. It's like, no, it's rookie minicamp. They're throwing two guys they just met. They're in shorts. They don't have install. They're just learning what's going on here. And it's too early to win rookie minicamp. But now there's just so much media, so much social media, that everything is just even ratcheted up so much more than it was even during those Johnny and Baker years.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Boy, this is a strong commentary, Mary Kay. I absolutely love it. I will admit this, that I had a couple of Facebook friends. Like, there's been some stuff that's been posted from sites that look legitimate but aren't legitimate. And I'm going, nah, that's – the Browns do not think that of Shador Sanders. They do not think that of Dylan Gabriel. It's kind of hard to focus on what's real and what's not, especially because, hey, Shador is a major star, but they did draft a quarterback in the third round, and I think that a lot of people who have no skin in the game have no problem of pitting fans and media against each other or anything like that. But I think that as we go through this season, as we get ready to go through this season, it's just who's going to give us the best mix of youth, development, but also a chance to win football games. So I wrestle with this all the time, Mary Kay. I really like Joe Flacco, but I do believe in my heart of hearts, like, okay, he might be destined for New Orleans, or he might be destined for somewhere else, and that we're probably going to start this season with Kenny Pickett, and eventually we'll get to Shador Sanders and Dylan Gabriel, or Dylan Gabriel and Shador Sanders.
Well, I'm sticking with my original heading into OTA sort of quarterback depth chart, and I've said it on this show before. I'm going Kenny Pickett, number one right now. Dylan Gabriel, number two. And then after that, I would have Joe Flacco and Shador Sanders at 3 and 4, sometimes 4 and 3. Those guys will pick it up on the back end. But the other two guys, because of how the Browns felt about them and how they pursued them and when they pursued them, those two guys, in my mind, are 1 and 2. And I believe that's how it's going right now in the OTAs. Now, they can flip that script. They can flip that narrative. But they're starting out this way with going into it thinking that Kenny Pickett is – potentially going to start the season. Who knows? Joe may come from behind and win this thing because of his sheer experience, his knowledge of the system, and the fact that he has a lot of reps and games in with this particular offense and this crew. So who knows how it's going to turn out, but that's how it's going to be heading in. And no matter what anybody says on the outside, the Browns are going to stick to their guns. Now, one of the things that they are going to do, they will hold concurrent passing drills. They have to. You have to keep it on the level playing field. So you'll have a set of guys over here and a set of guys over there. And that's why they are adding bodies at the receiver position. They need a lot of receivers to help out with this competition and keep it as level as you can. You can't have Shador throwing to the tryout guys and Kenny Pickett throwing to Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku, you've got to mix it up and make sure that at least in the early going, everybody's getting a fair shake at this. So you'll see concurrent drills going on. I think that's a smart and wise idea. We're not out there until, I think, May 28th, but then we'll start to see how this is all shaking out.
The schedule came out last night. It starts off, it's a bit of a gauntlet to start things off. Cincinnati at Baltimore, Green Bay at Detroit, Minnesota and London. And then you get to the Steelers. I don't know what the Steelers are going to be, but that's always an interesting game before you get any sort of a let up. We don't know. You know, maybe Miami will still be good. We don't know. I don't want this to turn into 2018 because you got two rookie quarterbacks and neither of them were a number one overall pick. I mean, I want these guys to have a chance. This is a very big year. Obviously, next year is a very big draft. We got to make sure this thing is done right. They got to make sure Kevin Stefanski's safe throughout the entire season, do they not?
Well, I think just looking at that gauntlet at the beginning of the schedule with the two AFC North games, and then as you mentioned, you've got three really tough NFC teams, and then in there you're heading to London, and you've got a stretch where I'm not sure if you guys noticed this or not, but four out of five games on the road, or at least away from Huntington Bank Field. One of those is in London, considered a home game, but it's still, of course, on the road. Four of five games on the road. You've got to be able to get through that stretch alive and still relevant. And therefore, I do think that probably a veteran is going to start the season. I don't know for sure if it'll be Kenny. I don't know if Joe will come from behind and win this thing. But I think they need to get off to a strong start to keep everybody's head in the game. You don't want to be losing the Myles Garretts early and the Denzel Wards early on. And you really have to be ready not only to win two AFC North games right from the jump, but then you've got to go across the pond and face a Vikings team that's just coming right over from Dublin in the midst of that four out of five on the road. So you have to come out of that alive and ready to continue to try to make a push. So I would think one of the veterans will win this thing.
Mary Kay, the lack of primetime games is something that seems to be bothering part of the fan base. I don't know what percentage. Obviously, we're in the media, so maybe we're too close to it. We're in a bubble. We are selfish. We worry about deadlines and things of that nature. But for you, Mary Kay, how did you feel about all those 1 o'clock?
Well, I actually thought that they would get at least one primetime game. I mean, there are some exciting, interesting things going on here. Once again, you have arguably the best defensive player in the NFL on your football team. You've got some Pro Bowlers elsewhere in Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku. You've got an interesting quarterback situation, and who knows where that's going yet. So I really did think that they would get at least one primetime game, and I thought it was a little bit of a snub, a little bit of a slap in the face. I think they deserved something, but you know, when you only win three games, it's hard to get those choice times.
A light slap in the face, like they took off a silk glove and hit you.
Yeah. Would that have been the case, Mary Kay, if they would have drafted Shador number two overall, and he would have been definitively the guy at some point, or at least by, you know, halfway through the season? Do you think maybe they could have gotten one then?
Maybe. I think it's very curious that they don't have any. Fortunately for them, they have the London game, so that will add some spice and drama to it. But when you don't have any of those primetime games, it is hard for some of your star players to get their individual accolades because nobody really sees them. So I do think it's unfortunate for the Mileses and the Denzels and the Judys and the Davids and those kind of guys, because they might not be seen the way that they wish they were. But if they're good enough, they'll get what they deserve.
Mary Kay, Kevin, so do you have a record real quick from this schedule yet or no?
I don't, but for some reason, my mind keeps going to somewhere around 7-8. I really don't know what the quarterback situation is and what that quarterback is going to look like. So it is hard to handicap this football team. But right now, just looking at how tough this schedule is, I mean, it finishes really hard too. I mean, you look at those last three games, you're talking about Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. So even if they are still in the thick of it then, and of course everyone hopes that they are, you have to get through that ending gauntlet. So I'm right now at about 7-8. My mind can be changed depending on what I see from the quarterbacks.
Ripper, Tone. Ripper. You came after me. Ripper.
Look,
go after Mary Kay.
You asked her opinion. I would say everything you just described, tough stretch at the start, gauntlet down the stretch, and we don't know the quarterback situation. That kind of points to more where I am, three wins, than it does seven or eight. I got to be honest with you, Mary Kay.
Well, let me explain. If you just don't turn the ball over 34 freaking times, and conversely, you take the ball away and you intercept it more than a league low four times, then you're going to add, in my mind, at least about three victories to your total over what happened last year. That was a turnover fest, and that's why decision-making and clean ball is going to be so important on the part of the quarterbacks this year, because they are not going to be, or at least they don't plan to be, losing the turnover battle in a big way every single week. And if you can win the turnover battle, you're going to win some football games.
The Canadian geese were just cheering Mary Kay for her excellent opinions in the background. Mary Kay, thank you so much for the time. Blessings to you and yours. All the very best, my friend.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. What?
I don't know if you wanted to let her know that you also put an extra game when you did.
Hey, when you did it, yeah.
Originally, and I was corrected.
I'm pumped.
I don't know that she'd be so proud to be on the same wavelength as you.
Yeah, listen, I am pumped that we found not one but two rookie quarterbacks that won't turn the ball over. Because we know in this league,
they're going to run the ball.
Most
they're
going
to run the damn ball.
Until it's,
ground and pound, baby.
Third and eight, they're running the ball.
Establish the run.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Establish the run.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
He's Mr. Andrew Siciliano. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Gentlemen, happy Friday to you and yours.
Thank you very much, and same to you. I saw you up there on the TikTok walking along the beach looking really cool.
Yeah, just, sometimes. So I go on my run every day, and then you got to, that's where I do my deep thinking.
Nice.
That's, that's how my post is deep thinking. So then, you're walking it out afterwards, and then sometimes I talk into my phone and I look like a lunatic walking on the sidewalk by myself, or other people walk by and go, why is that guy talking to his phone?
I think that's really cool. It's the way to do it.
But I'm glad that you like it.
Hey, Shador Sanders and Andrew Siciliano in a podcast. Tell me more.
Yeah, we taped it last week. Best best podcast available that we do with Jason Gibbs with Gibbe every week here in the off season. So we did one with Dylan Gabriel, did one with Dylan Sampson, did one with Shador Sanders, taped them last weekend, and this one just dropped. It's it was recorded after the first day of practice, so Saturday morning before the second day of practice. And there's a little insight. We haven't posted the clip yet, but it's in there if you want to watch the full pod. A little insight on the number 12, which I found interesting.
All right, good.
Are you going to give us any?
That's why you listen to the podcast.
No,
listen,
give the man his clicks.
Actually, no, guys, as we were standing there, we were talking about the jersey, because he had just gotten off the podium, and remember someone asked on the podium last Saturday, hey, you going to buy the number 2 from DeAndre Carter? And he made the crack about, like, you know, fifth round pick, I don't have a lot of money right now. Huh. It's not like, you know, first round paycheck where I might be going to buy a jersey.
Right.
And we were talking, so let's talk about the number 12. I go, it's dad's number backwards. Deion wore 21.
Yeah, Jeff said that too.
And he looks at me, he's like, yeah, you get it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay. So maybe that's an admission.
Yeah.
He had not been asked about that on the podium, or I hadn't heard him asked about that anywhere else. It was kind of like the smile, mm-hmm, you get it, admission that that was at least one of the rationale picking number 12.
Yeah. I would have said Carlton Fisk to him at that point, too, and I'm sure he would have been like, what?
Right, because he's going to remember the Red Sox catcher from the 70s,
that's right.
15 years before he was born.
Switching from, 27 to 17? Or
72.
To 72.
Yeah. Right, actually 25 years before he was born.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, go for that one. Try that.
I'm just trying to help you out, Andrew. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Family show here. Come on, please.
Okay, so let me ask you this, okay? I think this is going to be fun. I think it's going to be fascinating. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. The old expression, you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't really have one. What if you have four quarterbacks?
It's May 15th. What is it? 16th, right?
16th. Yeah, good.
Yeah, no, everything you said is right. It's early. And that was kind of the point I made. I didn't think that, you know, that video was going to get picked up by other people. This is the point I was making. And it was a point I think Kevin Stefanski made on the podium as well. And that is, guys, like, pump the brakes. I mean, it's a rookie mini camp, but it's an orientation, really, if anything. It's, can you digest the playbook? And Shador in the interview was talking about, like, what he talked about on the podium. Like, he was in the hotel room cramming and watching the Cavs game and trying to learn the playbook. It's an orientation. It's like putting the whole draft process behind you, which is exhausting. And we talked about that as well, right? You're going all over the country. You're doing the pro days. I mean, you're doing 50 million interviews. You're not necessarily like focusing on football, no matter how much you try to work out. And it's getting to know your teammates. It's like doing HR paperwork and like meeting everyone in the cafeteria and getting fitted for a helmet and a jersey. And then also playing football, like 7-on-7, some 11-on-11. I mean, it's no contact. The idea that any grand conclusions can be drawn from 3 days of rookie mini camp. And I realized that the assembled media there, and I was there Friday and Saturday, Sunday was not open to the media. People had different opinions. Maybe one day one looked better and the other day the other looked better. My point is, it's May. Like, there are no grand conclusions to be taken from rookie mini camp. They both had some very good moments, and at times they both look like rookies. But I think the most important thing was that they both acquitted themselves fantastically in the building and on the podium, connecting with fans and the media. They said all the right things. They presented themselves well. And I think check, 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 you know, call me in September.
All right. So this said, and you did a great job of laying out your argument. I've been asking everyone this, give me the Andrew Siciliano quarterback depth chart.
Well, I mean, if there were a game tomorrow, it would be Kenny Pickett or Joe Flacco.
No, you got to pick one.
These guys, I would say, it's a great question. I might lean Kenny Pickett right now. I might. Look, if Shador Sanders hadn't fallen to the fifth round, your quarterback room would be Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, and Dylan Gabriel. And you would probably say it's a competition between Pickett and Flacco. Pickett's the younger one. And Dylan Gabriel is going to learn and be the rookie and be the understudy and learn from two veterans. And if one was demonstrably better than the other, then sure. but it's Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco. Here you have two rookies, and you add another one to the mix, and it's going to be fascinating. But I think the good thing is you have two joint practices with the Panthers and the Eagles. You get a lot of work done in joint practices. You get 180 players combined between the two teams. You got a lot going on. And you have three meaningful preseason games. Like, gone are the days. This summer will be different. Gone are the days of this preseason game means nothing. These preseason games truly do mean something, and that's going to be fun.
I think you're right about that. Let me go from quarterback to running back, and it's one of my favorite things because I love the fact that they drafted two running backs. I don't love the fact that Nick Chubb is not on this team right now.
Agree.
But I understand it, Andrew. How do you see this thing playing out? And is Jerome Ford going into camp as 1 or 1A, or is Jerome Ford looking at two rookies and thinking, especially after adjusting his contract?
That's a very good question. I think it's backfield by committee, truly. I think Jerome Ford, as the veteran in the room, if you had to say right now who's on the field on third down, is Jerome Ford. You got to trust him in pass pro more so than a rookie. That's a thing for any NFL head coach or OC or offensive line coach, is can I trust a rookie running back in pass protection on third down? So Jerome Ford, I think, has the leg up there. He did enough. Ford did, I think, to earn carries this year. Absolutely. I mean, he had explosives last year. If you look at his numbers, they're better than I think people, better than the eye test at times. It's a three-headed monster. And as for Nick Chubb, I want him back as well. I think, obviously, Andrew said, AB said, it's increasingly unlikely. Yeah. It is tough out there for a veteran running back. I don't know what Nick wants to get paid, and I don't know if he has an offer in front of him somewhere else that he has not yet said yes to. He is a veteran running back that will undoubtedly find a job come playoff time. Come training camp time, beg your pardon. The question is it with the Browns? I think with the Browns, maybe, and this is just my gut, he feels that Kareem Hunt, in case of an injury, you're the first guy we're calling role. But you can't stop him from getting another job because right now the Browns don't have one for him necessarily that they can agree on.
I get that. I'm excited about Judkins. I'm excited about Sampson. The minute they drafted those two guys, I thought, boy, Nick coming back here as a third guy doesn't sound right. And would 1A and one of those rookies come? It's a tough mix. And when Andrew Berry said what he said, Andrew, I thought, well, that's exactly what I've been thinking about this. And it's interesting to hear him say that. So many great running backs do not spend their entire career with one team and finish like with a year or two or three with another team. That might be what happens with Nick Chubb. And if so, best of luck to him if he wants to keep playing. But man, I wish you were here.
I wish you were here as well. And I thought what AB said as well, you try to make unemotional football decisions, yeah. Yet do it as empathetically as possible with the human being that you love, who has been a cornerstone of this community, most importantly, and of this franchise since he was drafted in 2018. It's going to be hard to see the Cleveland Browns without Nick Chubb. But I think that's what we have to come to accept is likely going to happen. I'll never say never. And AB said, I'll never say never. There's absolutely a scenario because this is a tough sport and injuries happen. Someone is going to sign Nick Chubb. And I hope it is the Browns. Now, you hope it's not because of an injury, but, we'll see what happens. If he finds another job out there, I will be rooting for him.
Yep.
He will be my favorite non-Brown, let's put it that way, in the NFL. I play fantasy football, but I'm not someone who screams and yells and jumps up and down. Right. When my fantasy team does something, I have no control over. Like, what did I do? I put the obvious guy in the lineup, and if he scores a touchdown, yay. Like, he has no emotional impact on me. But Nick Chubb, that would be different. I'm going to cheer for Nick Chubb wherever he is.
Andrew, the schedule came out this week. Without getting into all the trite questions about the schedule, just what did you think? What were your overall thoughts? And obviously 13 1 o'clock games.
Yeah, I think they deserved a primetime game. I can make the argument that any AFC North game that you put in primetime, you're fine. You're scheduling a safe game and a good, entertaining, storyline-filled matchup. There is a reason that when Hard Knocks picked a division to do a series on, the first one they picked was the AFC North. I think the Browns deserve to be in primetime. They were also picking second overall, so I get it. They do have a standalone game, which is London, obviously. The Titans do not. The Titans have no game outside of a 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock window, so they have every right to be more upset than the Browns are, but I think the Browns are a brand that always draw. What I don't like is the fact, and I know it's New York, I get it, it's New York, but the Giants have three primetime games. They finished with the same record as the Browns and the Titans, and they have three. The Giants since 2020 are 2-15 in primetime, so they're not good TV historically the last 5 years. So I would argue the Browns should get ahead of them in that pecking order. But you have, if you look at the December schedule, you have an opportunity, if you can navigate the schedule and be in contention, or at least be good TV down the stretch, look at Buffalo and Pittsburgh and all those games in December. Don't tell me that one of those isn't flex worthy, but you got to make it flex worthy.
Got about 30 seconds. Ideal situation. Do you think the Browns would like to see Kenny Pickett come in and look really good in his fourth NFL season and be the guy? A 40-year-old Joe Flacco look like he did for five games, or one of these rookies surprise like crazy and just flat out go win that starting job?
I think there's no wrong answer to any of those. I think in a perfect scenario in December, the Browns are playing meaningful football with at least an idea of who their long-term answer could be.
Okay. Great to have you with us, buddy.
Love you guys.
Podcast, thank you. Shedeur Sanders, out right now. Where can people find it? Anywhere they get their podcast?
All the Cleveland Browns platforms. Browns YouTube, Browns Social, anywhere. Go find it.
Done. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
See you guys.
Andrew Siciliano on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Max Drew sent a motivational text to his teammates to the Cavs on Tuesday morning. What were some of his teammates thinking when they received that text? Well, we have some very interesting audio of what they might have been thinking when they got that text from Max. That's coming up at 7:45. However, we bring in Bobby Marks now to talk about how the Cavs can get better, if the Cavs can get better, if there are any moves that the Cavs can make. Bobby Marks, former NBA assistant general manager, ESPN. Bobby, real quick, I don't think you cross paths with Kenny Atkinson at Brooklyn, no?
No, I was, my last year was 2015.
And that was before.
Yeah, no, I didn't, not, but I know Kenny well. So no, I did not work with him in Brooklyn though.
So, you know, we're trying to, it's unfair, but it's blame radio, things like that. Bobby, what are the differences from last year to this year between JB Bickerstaff and Kenny Atkinson that we can hold on to? Because, you know, we're trying to find somebody to point our sights at right now. And, you know, the players are the players. We very rarely want to point it at the players. We always go at the head coach. We did it last year with JB, and here we were this year. And it's like, oh, inbounds passes, things like that. I'm like, well, we said the same thing about that last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year they were – you know, I know certainly Donovan kind of limped to the finish line a little bit, but I felt, you know, and I know, you know, Jarrett was out, but I mean, this year, I mean, as I said in the article, for the first, 7 months of the regular season and 2 weeks of the playoffs, they were the best team in the NBA. I mean, or at least in the Eastern Conference. And then all of a sudden you get to a second round against Indiana and things certainly changed. I mean, the list of injuries, certainly, if you want to blame that, and nobody, I guess, probably nobody really cares, but I mean, when you have Mobley, Garland, Mitchell, Hunter, I mean, none of those four guys are 100%. I think that plays a huge role. I think, listen, it's a disappointing year. You win 64 games and you're expecting to get to a conference, to a conference finals. The game, of course, game two is probably the game that lost the series, the inability to close when you should have. So, yeah, I mean, listen, you guys, of course, you can you can do blame radio and you can pick apart and stuff like that. But I do think, you know, I do think a lot. I mean, them during the regular season last year were they were a good to average team. I mean, then during this year, of course, were a dominant team. But as we know, things changed in the second round here, and I do think injuries had to play at least some of it into that.
Bobby Marks with us right now on the hotline. So the first thing we all do immediately when a team loses in the playoffs is start to think about whether or not they need to retool or not. And last year, they decided, you know what, we are keeping the core, but we are dismissing the coach. So that was going to be where they made their big change. Well, obviously, Atkinson's going to be back next year. Now the question is, how prohibitive is the new CBA landscape for them to be able to truly make moves?
Extremely prohibitive. The extension of Donovan kicking in, and then certainly with Evan's extension, you know, changing, with him being named Defensive Player of the Year, adding another $8 or $9 million to their payroll next year has, and then of course when they went out and made the DeAndre Hunter trade at the deadline, they basically paused the financial clock for about a year, and it's equivalent to going out and getting a home equity loan where you're getting money up front, but you're going to pay a significant interest rate down the road there. And that's what's basically going to happen with the Hunter trade. They're a second apron team right now. So what does that mean? They're $13 million. They're not just over, they're $13 million over. So they can't combine salaries in a trade. So if you're looking to try to trade Jared Allen and Max Strus for a $35 million player coming back, you're not allowed to do that. If you were trying to trade for, if you're trying to trade Jared Allen and you want to take back a $22 million player, you're not allowed to do that. If you want to send out cash into trades, you're not allowed to do that. Your exceptions are basically all eliminated. Your signing exceptions are basically eliminated. Your pick in 2033, your first will get frozen if you finish over the second apron this next season here. That's why if you're going to try to trade your pick in 31 or 32, you got to do it basically during this upcoming season here. You can bring back Ty Jerome if you want. You are allowed to do that. There's no restriction except for maybe a little bit of the cost, but it comes out a significant number. For example, if you sign them to a $14 million salary, it costs you another $80 million towards the luxury tax. So it's, there's certainly restrictions. The CBA doesn't tell you that you can't keep what you have, but it's basically telling you that you can't add any, it limits you as far as adding everything else.
31 and 32. I mean, good God, we're going to have a new football stadium by then. You're scaring the hell out of me over here, Bobby.
You're not the only team who's in that boat.
Whoa.
There's a lot of those teams that have those. Listen, Denver's in that same situation. The Lakers are in that same situation where, you have basically depleted your assets as far as from the Donovan trade. And then certainly going out and get Hunter, you eliminated most of your swap rights and everything here, and that's probably your big trade asset is your 2031 or 32 first to go out and do something.
So the Hunter trade, because I made the point on social media yesterday that it seemed like it was actually now more risky than I thought at the time. Now, granted, I didn't think they'd get bounced in the second round, and it's unfortunate he got injured in the series, even though he was able to play. So do you think they would have been better off maintaining their flexibility, or is that a move you make every time because they needed that length and you weren't assuming they were going to get bounced as early as they did?
Yeah, I think what would have happened is you still would have had Niang and his salary on your books, and you would have been forced to, Karras would have been here too, but he would have been a free agent. You would have had a little bit of flexibility, but it wasn't like, you would have still been a luxury tax team. You would have probably been close to the first apron. So it would have still have limited you as far as going out and signing a player in free agency.
So, Bobby, what can the Cavs actually do? Can they do anything to be better than what they are? I mean, they won 64 games.
Well, that's the hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know. It's like, what can I do to be better? And then you're like, wait a minute, they just won 64 games, right? It's like, it is an extremely hard question to answer. They've got 11 guys under contract. They've got two picks in the second round. Certainly, those are probably more designated to two-way guys. Yeah, I'm sure that the age-old question will come back as far as the Garland-Mitchell fit. I'm sure that the Mobley-Allen fit, which I thought was pretty good this year. I mean, they were a really good team. Unfortunately, they found a unfortunate fate when it comes to when it comes to the playoffs. Listen, they'll explore. I don't think you could just sit here after losing, getting bounced in the second round, and after winning 64 games, and say, "Oh, you know what? We're going to do it all again." You know, and because what you don't want to happen is you get to this point again next year, and basically the same things happen. Defensively, kind of went out the window a little bit, which we were one of the better defensive teams. I mean, you did everything right. I mean, you had the fifth fewest games missed to injury this year. You managed Donovan really well. Unfortunately, he gets hurt towards the end of in the playoffs here. But I do think you'll be exploring trades as far as what you can do, as I said, but you're just kind of limited as far as what the return value is going to be.
All right, Bobby, with that said, you gave us all the limitations of the deals you could make, but could you provide a framework of a deal you could make? The names that keep coming up are Jared Allen and Darius. So if you were to, let's just say, move one of those guys, what's the framework of a deal you could do that would be feasible under the CBA?
Listen, if you wanted to, hypothetical, let's say, have to be a third team involved. If you wanted to go out and try to get like Drew Holiday, for example, okay, just hypothetical, and you wanted to trade Darius, you would have to basically trade Darius to a third team and get Drew Holiday from Boston. That works because you were taking back less money. One makes, I think, 34, 35. The other one makes close to 40. That type of deal would work. As far as with Jarrett, he's going and he still has one more year left on his original contract. So that's at 20. So you're basically looking at anything, anything less than 20, $20 million, which it doesn't get you terrific value out there, but that's the type of framework. As I said, you just can't combine his number with another salary. If you can't combine him and Isaac's number to go get a $30 million player out there.
Why did the league move to do something that would limit, like, owners like Dan Gilbert, who love spending money, have no problem spending money and spare no expense? Why do you think the league went to this? Because originally it was, well, to prevent the super teams and everything. But now you have a team in Cleveland, homegrown draft picks, a superstar trade that they use their own assets to get. It wasn't like there was any collusion or conspiring to form a team like this. And it seems like they are now being penalized for drafting well.
Well, they're not really homegrown. I mean, they drafted well with Mobley and Garland, but they traded for Allen and Mitchell. So,
aren't those savvy trades and using your own assets to make it happen?
Sure. I mean, but they're similar to where Boston is. Boston traded for Derek White and Porzingis, and they're going to pay a financial cost, and that roster is going to be torn apart after the season is. I think the reason why the league did it is why we're looking at the playoffs right now, where you can say any team remaining can still win a championship. I mean, that's a big reason why, and it forced owners like one of the wealthiest owners in Steve Ballmer in the world to walk away from, basically the apron has scared billionaires. I mean, that's the reality of it. And the NBA has accomplished doing it, where you have, whether it be Ballmer walking away from Paul George, and that trade, and that worked for him. Them not signing Paul George was the best move they could do. Golden State not signing Klay Thompson, and it worked for him. You could still go out and, we saw the Lakers go out and get Luka, and Golden State go out and get Jimmy Butler. The hard part now becomes is that when you're one of these teams that pay a significant price, those deals basically kind of go out the window.
Bobby Marks joining us here from ESPN. Hey, in team building, how does a team get tougher?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
That's a good question. Listen, you're going to have to find, it's not going to grow over the summer, right? Yeah. It's not going to, and it's funny because it's a good point. It's a good point because you watch some of these other series and some of these games kind of turn into a hockey, there's always going to be whether it be Golden State, the Houston series or Golden State, Minnesota, there's going to be a flare up somewhere, right? we didn't really see that as much. You know, I know we saw a little bit as far as maybe a teeny bit in this Indiana series because, but there's, yeah, there was no guys that you can kind of throw in your fourth line and say like, you know, hey, go out and get, you know, take care of their best player and stuff. So yeah, how do you go out and do that? I mean, I guess you're going to do it probably in the veteran minimum market there and find, you know, so you can find a, you know, a guy that kind of fits that identity. But yeah, that's every team needs one or two of them. Unfortunately, you know, Cleveland didn't have one. It probably pays more for the playoffs than regular season, but yeah, that's, I would think something, how do you get more of a defensive identity and how do you become tougher?
Well, some people are saying like Tristan Thompson should go out there and start socking people. And I'm like, well, I don't know how that works. And they're like, well, how does it work? Well, Bobby, can you explain how that doesn't work like that?
Yeah, listen, if he went out there, I would think Tristan Thompson, he didn't make a lot of money. He would probably lose most of that paycheck that he earned this year as far as to do that. But I do think, you know, like P.J. Tucker, and I know P.J. Tucker's past his prime right now. Like when P.J. Tucker was in Milwaukee, and he had a role, right? I mean, there was a role for him out there. That's hard. It's just hard to kind of go out and find those type of guys now.
Bobby Marks, ESPN. Follow him on Twitter. Bobby, thank you very much for the time. All the best to you and yours.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. At Bobby Marks 42 on social media on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Back on Afternoon Drive, Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin with you. We got plenty to get to on today's show. More Browns talk on the way. We do have quick hits coming up at 6 o'clock, but our next guest got a up row front seat for the Cavaliers, the debacle. I know what I said, up row. I know. Don't give me that look. I hate all of you. Now,
I was going to let it go.
I would like to point out, it was the looks that hurt. I would like to point out that Z on Twitter saying he thinks Collapsaliers is better than Cavalapse. I will admit, Collapsaliers made me laugh quite a bit.
It's pretty good. We're workshopping it. We'll get there, maybe.
So to talk about the Collapsaliers and the latest gentleman sweep that ended their regular season. Our next guest actually has something he published earlier today on the Collapsaliers, as they're called. Now it feels personal. Now I've said it three times. But it felt personal. This series felt personal. We're going to go out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline and welcome in of the Athletic, the great Joe Vardon. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
I mean, I thought it'd be going better at this point. I thought it was on pace to maybe being razzed about taking vacation across games 2 through 4 of the NBA Finals, and then the Cavs aren't in it, so I guess it doesn't matter.
I guess it doesn't. You know, the story that I published does have the word collapse in the headline. But I think that using that word is maybe not entirely fair. It certainly is fair to the Cavs regular season compared to what happened in the playoffs. But I don't know how anybody could have watched that series and not thought that the Pacers were the better, tougher team. I think the Pacers are going to be really hard to deal with in the conference finals, and maybe the finals too. So long as they stay healthy, they're ridiculous with the pace that they play. And when you say pace, you think about how a team pushes the ball and runs in transition, but that's not it here. Kenny said it best. They play like a college team, and he meant that as a phrase of endearment. They press full court the whole game and then take the ball out from under the basket and go, or get a rebound and go. So, you know, the Knicks, I mean, they play six guys. It's going to be hard for them to do that over seven games. The Celtics, obviously, Tatum's gone, and something's really wrong with Porzingis. So they're behind. So, you know, we're not real happy as Clevelanders about the juxtaposition between the regular season and the postseason for the Cavs. But the Pacers are really good.
Yeah, what surprised me the most, Joe, I mean, the Pacers ended up with six different guys in double digits in scoring, and if you would have told me a team did that before the series started, I'd have been like, it's the Cavs, you know, a team that Atkinson routinely said, we have the best 6 through 10 in the entire NBA. The difference for me was in a lot of that, and the trust that Donovan seemed like he didn't have in a lot of those guys, especially late in Game 5.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a lopsided affair when it comes to reserves. I mean, you got to think about, like, TJ obviously dominated Ty Jerome. I meant TJ McClellan. How about that? That's Ty Jerome's initials. Didn't mean that. All right. So anyway, McConnell, he won that one going away. Obi Toppin, much better than DeAndre Hunter this series. It's not close. We're not going to argue that. And Benedict Mathurin, other than, you know, the cheap shot of punching DeAndre in the chest, he was awesome. So yeah, I mean, that's another one where, you know, it didn't really matter who Kenny turned to off the bench. I mean, Isaac and Dean were good for like a quarter of game five, excuse me. We know about Jerome in this series. You know, Sam was kind of didn't really, you know, he had one good game, I believe, not available for game five either. So, yeah, I mean, that was a strength. And we all said it all year that the Cavs are deep. They're versatile. They got deeper with DeAndre. That's all true. It just wasn't true in this series.
Joe Varden in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So I was perusing your story on the Cavaliers here before
Wait
the show.
A minute. You should be reading it word by word.
I perused first, and then I went back and devoured it like the Harry Potter books. So you made a point about Donovan being able to, whether it's put pressure in the front office or his coach or the organization without maybe doing it directly. So can you expound on your point? Was Donovan using the media when he said that they could go 82-0 next year and people would count them out?
No, I think at that one, he was just kind of like expanding on the point that he was making where I do think he was trying to use the media. And just to be clear, I mean, I said this in the story too, but, you know, I met him in 2019, the first Team USA that I covered. He was on that team in China. We were all over that country for a month. The next year was the bubble. I was in the bubble, so was he. And then he's been here for 3 years. So, you know, I've seen him, and I've kind of seen him grow up, and certainly in Cleveland, I'm just like, I find him to be like LeBron level in terms of understanding business and understanding the power that he has. And so all of that being said, when I listen to him after game five, knowing him as I do, he is too smart to be like saying that in earnest. Like if those comments were taken at face value, then basically you have a star player on a team that was one of the best teams in NBA regular season history, get punked at home three times and lose a series that they were heavily favored 4-1 and turn around and preemptively whine about coverage. There's no way Donovan Mitchell did that. No way. So what was he doing? Okay, he and I haven't had this discussion. So yes, this is a little bit of conjecture on my part. But knowing him as I do and laying out what I just laid out, I believe that he was opening the door and or encouraging the criticism to come forth in the specific areas for how this team got beat. He knows he didn't shoot it well. He knows there was one bad turnover at the end of game two, but he knows he played his tail off. He knows he played hurt. He knows he averaged 32 point whatever points per game. He knows that. Come on. He's not even expecting the criticism to come at him. He knows which players and like collectively what happened, but he doesn't want to sit up on the dais and say that. Okay. And, you know, I'm not in the locker room with these guys when the doors are closed, but I don't think he's in there, you know, finger pointing and that kind of thing. But, you know, saying what he said certainly opened the door for that, for some of the individual, like sort of point by point, well, this is what went wrong and this is what you guys need to fix so this doesn't happen next year.
Well, from your perspective, then, if we removed Donovan from any of the blame, where would you put the blame?
Well, so at the end of the piece, Kenny, in one of the many things he said. He said, you know, Evan, and he said Evan a couple times. Once he said Evan will get a little better, Evan will get a little stronger. You know, he said the same thing about Darius. I think there are a couple basic, I think there are three basic problems, okay? One is the maturity level of some of the players. I know we've been talking about toughness. I know we've been talking about enforcers. I still think that stuff is overrated, and I still think that, like, you know, Tristan and Shump and JR, you know, that team we all loved in 16, like, yeah, those guys played with chips on their shoulders, but they're not like brawlers, you know. They're not going to go put you in a headlock. So I think the toughness, I think the enforcing stuff is a little overrated, but so we all say that the maturity is one thing. I talk a little bit about culture, and I've been writing about this a little bit and talking about it a little bit. I think that is a thing. And then the third thing that I think is probably the only thing that I don't know if they can play around is the small guards. Okay. So I think that whoever you want to say, needs to mature a little bit, toughen up a little bit. I think they can, and I think they will. I think given the time, you know, I'm not ruling that out for anybody. People can evolve, and these are young men. Like, they're young. And I know that, like, Darius has been in these playoffs now a bunch, and I guess so is Evan. But Evan's, like, what, 22 or 23? Like, the sky is still the limit for that guy. So that can be fixed. The culture stuff I'm talking about, and again, like everybody, like, people need to take a second to listen to this. Like, the Cavs, when LeBron left, they needed to find a way to make themselves attractive to people who were never from here. You know, the weather stinks. We know that. The taxes are too high. We know that. We live here. We love it. We know that too. But free agents don't. Okay. So that, you know, the Cleveland's reputation was what it was. And so they had to figure out a way to make this place more attractive. And what they did was they created a culture where the players are protected and empowered. And I am not necessarily criticizing that. It has worked. The Cavs have a positive reputation in the league among players. They are protected during the regular season. They feel it. They feel good about being here. They're upset when they get traded away. Okay? But the culture of that and sort of like what that means and what that represents, we have seen now in two consecutive playoffs where we get a player or multiple players who are questionable with injuries and they end up not playing. Now, that could be a reporting issue, which is also an organizational thing. You know, maybe these guys are really hurt, like way worse than questionable. And the organization plays these, like, sort of, you know, cloak and dagger games with their opponents. And what ends up happening is fans and media, but fans mostly, I mean, I can show you guys my texts from all the people I grew up with, you know, how upset they were throughout, like, the rest of Miami series and throughout the first few games of this one. And the same thing last year with what happened with Jared Allen. So it's either we have a culture where players are not used to playing through injuries, or we have like an organization that's kind of being a little loose with the questionable language, like trying to accomplish one thing. And then what ends up happening is like the players kind of get extra pressure put on them at home. Okay. That can be fixed. Here's the third thing. Darius Garland, a two-time All-Star, good player. He's 6'1" listed. Is he taller than me? Maybe. Yeah, probably, but I'm 5'10". I'm 5'10". Donovan is listed at 6'3". Once I went up to him and I said, "Are you really 6'3?" And he's like, "Yeah." But the look on his face, like, he kind of got it. So anyway, even if those guys are the heights that they're listed, there have only been three teams in NBA history to win a title with two guards that are both under 6'4", we'll say. Okay? Three. I don't know if they can get around that, especially as physical and as fast-paced and it, like, as much of this game that is played on the perimeter now. I mean, look at how physical Naismith and Nemhard were on the perimeter. Like, forget about the banging and the paint of the 90s and the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s. No. This game is a battle on the perimeter. And I am concerned that despite how good those two players are, and that they can even play together and have the great, like, the best offense in the NBA this year, best offense in franchise history. Like, so it's not like they can't score the ball together, can't play together, but when you get into these playoff situations, history tells us that it's very hard to win with two smaller guards. And that is my number one concern about this team. It's not the maturity and the toughness we all talk about, and it's not even this one culture issue that I scream about. It's the two small guards.
Joe, do they stand pat this summer?
You know, Nick, I mean, I think they can. You know, I think, you know, I this small guard thing that I just went nuts about, like, I wrote about it. I posed it to Kenny and to some of the people in the organization, and they feel like Donovan plays bigger. So they don't think this is a problem. And so if the other two things are true, if you can fix those other two things, like, I don't think I think that 64 wins, like, that is legitimate. And I just think, you know, they got outplayed and outclassed in this series. And, like, there is, like, you know, ask the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Miami Heat, or even the Yankees, you know, of the, like, sort of like the, you know, the good reasons to continually run it back. You stay together, you grow together, you know, you eventually get to the finals. Maybe you win the Super Bowl, whatever. So they can run it back. They might have to because of the second apron and how much money they will be paying already. It makes it really hard to make trades. If they could move Jared Allen to diversify the roster, but do it in the way that they think makes sense, then I think they would listen. If they could move Darius for an impact bigger player, but it's got to be an impact player, then I think you do. There's, for instance, like, Orlando is kind of stuck as sort of that, like, 5-7 seed, and they can't shoot and they can't move the ball, and they have Paolo Banchero. They have no point guards. So, you know, if Orlando was interested in Darius, would they part with Franz Wagner? Well, Franz has the size and the scoring ability that the Cavs would need, and he actually makes slightly less money than Darius, so they could actually do that trade. I'm not saying that is a trade that's even on the table. I'm giving your listeners an example of a deal that would make sense. But they might run it back, and they might have to.
Joe, great stuff as always, buddy. We really appreciate you. And any other nice things you'd like me to say before we let you go?
Not at all. I just... hopefully we'll talk again during the finals.
Great stuff, man. Really appreciate you.
This is going into the noon hour?
We're going to talk to Anthony in a second here, okay. But I just wanted to get this out.
Yeah.
Anthony Castrovince momentarily.
Yeah.
And Andy presses his luck too frequently, walking into luck. Crosswalks, thinking the traffic's just going to stop because they're supposed to. Well, as I told him, you might be right, but you might be dead.
I am maybe crazy.
I got a text from my buddy Jeff in Cleveland who said,
"Who likes me?
We're friends." Just hit two people in the crosswalk right by Playhouse Square.
Not funny.
I feel great about myself now.
Not funny. Not funny. You may not want to openly
admit
that.
That's the way these people think.
Which one? That he hit two people? He didn't hit.
That's the way people think, Andy. They're just driving. They're not looking out for little Andy Baskin.
Does anyone ever notice the crosswalks? I mean, do people actually stop?
Well, let's ask Anthony Castrovince.
All right.
He's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Anthony, we're having an intervention. Baskin walks into traffic and crosswalks, assuming the cars are going to stop because they're supposed to.
Because it's law.
Oh, yeah.
Tell him, please.
No, I can't. I'm totally with him on that. I do the same thing.
Boom!
Are we going to have to bury you guys side by side or what?
Well, it's interesting how when we are pedestrians, you know, we assume so much out of, I mean, at least I'm speaking for myself and apparently Andy, when I say we assume so much out of the cars, you know, deference to the pedestrians. And then when we're in the car, our personality completely switches. And it's like, what are you doing, idiot? Why are you walking in the crosswalk?
Yeah, I think that's what the lady said when she drove around the corner to see me walking down the street. So she tried to yell at me again. She may have yelled, I'm sorry. Which would have made me feel better.
Or she might have yelled things we can't say here on the show.
I don't know. I think she was still on the phone. So what's the difference?
I'm in Scottsdale every year during spring training, and they have those Waymo driverless cars. And my dream is that one will run up and hit me, and I'll collect a nice payment from the Waymo people. But it hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Is it freaky when he's... I've never seen one around here.
Your heirs will appreciate that.
Is that freaky?
It is freaky, and I at one time I was laughing because I saw these two guys were really excited that their Waymo was coming, and they're going to try it out seemingly for the first time. And the one guy had his iPhone out, and he's taking a video as they walk up to the car, and they're going to get in the car. Well, all the locks on the door were employed. They couldn't get in the car. They're just standing there for a few minutes, and then the car drives off without them.
So, that's funny.
So I hope that video's out there somewhere.
So tonight... it's the big battle of Ohio, the big grudge match. Terry Francona going up against the Guardians. He left the Guardians. He's in Cincinnati now, right here in the state of Ohio. We tried to hype it like crazy early on.
No one's on board.
Neither are we.
No one's on board.
We have no animosity toward this man. He took a break. Yeah. He's back in baseball. Congratulations. Guardians have a good manager. Is that about where this thing sits?
It really is. I think by the time things ended here, you know, it was a rough final season for him on a couple of different fronts. You know, the team struggles, and he had some puzzling moves where he kind of felt like, man, Tito, I mean, it just didn't feel right, you know, and he was really hobbled, and, you know, it gotten to the point where it's just hard for him to do the job, to do the travel. And so when he quote unquote retired, it turned out to be a very brief retirement, but you know, it felt right. And it felt like, you know, a real chapter had been established here where that was a real, I mean, tenure doesn't begin to describe it. That was a real era of Cleveland baseball, you know, and then they go on to do great things in the first year without him. And so how do you begrudge him, you know, retiring when he did, given the state of his physical condition, and how do you begrudge him the opportunity to get back into baseball now that he's feeling better, you know? So he has a new chapter there in Cincinnati, and if anything, it just feels good to see him. You know, it feels good to see him in the dugout, and it's rivalry week, if you can say that. You're not me in MLB, you know, I don't feel a rivalry there personally. I just feel it's good to see him, and it's a manager, so it's not like he's on the field, you know, beating the Guardians that way. So it's just kind of a different vibe.
Are the Twins, the White Sox, the Tigers? Who is the Guardians' true rival?
That's a great question. You know, it's the AL Central is very yearly dependent. You know, these teams kind of cycle through, and it was the Twins at one time. It's been the Tigers at one time. It's been the White Sox at one time. I can't answer that question. I don't know. I mean, it feels like, if anything, you kind of feel this Reds rivalry is kind of fun, right? Because it's got a little novel, a little bit. It's not a novelty anymore. They've played so often, but. It is, you know, the Ohio Cup is on the line, guys. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think the Ohio Cup is the greatest trophy in professional sports. And so
they couldn't find it for a while there.
Yeah, well, it was a doorstop.
They lost it.
Well,
it
might be the favorite thing I've ever written was the search for the Ohio Cup where we uncovered it in the basement of Progressive Field. But no, so I'm going to step out of the division and just say the Reds, just because there's no consistency in the division as to who is their most bitter rival.
You know what is in the division? And Anthony Castrovitz joining us from MLB.com. What is in the division, at least through 27% of the season or wherever we are, four of the top six records in the American League.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I saw... I love Bob Nightingale, but he tweeted something last week about suddenly the AL Central, you know, is hot. And it's like, hey, they contributed, you know, three division series teams last year. So you got to give the division some respect at a certain point. I know that, you know, the White Sox had a historically bad year last year, and that definitely played in the records, but not as much as it used to, you know, with the now the schedule's more balanced and not as weighted towards the division. If anything, I think we saw that, you know, vying for those three playoff spots brought out the best in those clubs, where they were able to go into October and perform at a high level. So you're seeing that again this year. You know, it's really fun to watch. I think these clubs are built differently, but they're built right. You know, I think the Royals deserve a lot of credit for the way they've completely overhauled their pitching in the J.J. Piccolo era and the Mac Quattaro era. And, you know, the Tigers had to do it a different way last year, where they were really short manned on the pitching side. But now that is a really deep club pitching wise. And the lineup is way better than anticipated. So they're a real force in the American League now, and all the better from their experience of going on that wild run at the end of last season. And we are well familiar with the Guardians and just, you know, making it work on a tight budget and routinely just churning out quality teams. You know, they just teams that generally don't beat themselves. I think that's the big, you know, the big thing here.
It's been kind of fun to watch and see guys grow as the season started, especially because the offense was, oh man, was not a lot of fun when the season started. And now they're starting to percolate. Yeah. And Manzardo is really making his mark. Kyle Manzardo is making his mark right now. Your thoughts on his play and then the adjustments that they've had to make in the lineup that I believe help right now.
Yeah, definitely. Manzardo's been, I think it was pretty clear he was going to be a big X factor for this club, just how they're constructed, and losing Josh Naylor's power, you know, trading that in for Carlos Santana's, you know, defense and on base. So you needed somebody to step up in the power department, and Manzardo's done that in a big way. You know, he's obviously, it's, you know, high swing and miss and high power, you know, it's high, it's low batting average. I looked it up recently. I don't know if it's still true, but as of a week or two ago, it was him and Roger Maris in 1961 in terms of how low the batting average on balls in play was and how high the overall production was. Very strange profile. So he's only going to get better. I really like his swing. I really like his approach to hitting. And again, I know that comes with some growing pains here in terms of the strikeouts, but I really think that's going to be a really quality bat for them. And it's nice to see him, you know, have both opportunities and success against same-sided pitching, you know, from the left-hand side. So he's been huge for them. And yeah, they had to make a change up the middle. I think that was pretty obvious, but you know, it's nice when you have a guy like Daniel Schneemann. You know, last year, we saw spurts of it last year, but to have him perform consistently, I mean, these are the things you need to happen on a low budget. You got to have some pleasant surprises, and whether that's sustainable or not, we shall see. But you know, him and Arias have both been terrific for them, and now they make a nice pairing up the middle.
So I was just going to ask you about right now. It's working with Gabe Arias and with Daniel Schneemann. And if you want to play Angel Martinez at second, you can do that too. What do you think the possibility is that those guys actually latch onto those spots and keep them for a while?
Yeah, you know, it's almost like it doesn't matter because they'll go to the well. You know, they'll find other options. That's just what they do here. They'll churn through other guys if they have to. You have to ride what you have, and that's what they've done for the better part of the last few seasons, is cycle through young guys and try to find a formula that works that night, that week, that month, that whatever. So they're, you know, when you look at Schneemann's profile, I mean, it looks pretty legit in terms of what's under the hood. Arias is maybe a little more shaky in that area, but, you know, that's a guy who was at one time identified as perhaps a cornerstone type player up the middle. So so I don't put it past him to keep it going. But again, if it doesn't, I mean, Travis Bezzana is doing great things at AA. You know, and I think it's realistic you could see him before the end of the season. Juan Brito is hurt, and that stinks because that's a guy they really hope to turn to if need be early in the season, so that he's not an option for them until the second half, but he will probably be an option for them at some point. I never know how to pronounce his name, but Angel Janao, it doesn't matter how many times I hear his name, I seem to have trouble remembering how it's supposed to be pronounced.
Janoa?
He's another guy they like.
So isn't it Janoa? Yeah. Is that right?
Janoa. There's another guy they like up the middle. So, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying we'll see. And things change often around here, so we'll see.
I'm just curious, just the story is amazing to me, the Tyler Naquin story, and if he's going to be able to try to pitch. And how far do you think this thing can go, and have you been keeping your eye on it at all?
Well, I kept my eye on it
From a distance, I haven't, like, you know, actually seen him in action. So I don't know. I mean, we have these novelties occasionally in baseball where guys try to take up another position, and it's rare that it does stick. You know, Anthony Gose was a pretty incredible story. I know he was optioned out to AAA roughly 500 times in a couple of years in Cleveland, but just to get to the big leagues as a pitcher, as he did, and, you know, just to be a functional body is incredible. It really is. I mean, that guy was a top outfield prospect at one time. So, I don't put it past Naquin. I mean, he's a great athlete, good dude, good competitor. So sure. But have I seen him pitch? No. Do I know if it will go anywhere? I have no idea. But it would be an incredible story if he does. That's for sure.
It's fun. I think the story's fun. I hope he makes it.
Yeah.
Anthony, yeah, thank you, buddy.
That's the guy that's easy to root for sure. Yeah,
true.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, guys. Watch out for those cars.
There it is. Tell them. You too, by the way, apparently.
We'll see you guys.
Anthony Castrovince joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.